Coming at you from the aromatic tenderloin district of San Francisco, it's the Are You Serious show.
Hello, I'm Are You Serious, and this is my show.
Welcome. Come right in. You can't afford to miss this. Step right up.
Disasters, and eventually the end of the world. So we did promise in our last program a couple of weeks back, because we did take the 4th of July weekend off to recalibrate our space-time dimensions. We were so moved, so demented by talking to Jack Sarfati that we had trouble coming back down to planet Earth. But we're back here. And we did promise in the last show that Stephen Dunifer, who is the father of pirate radio, was going to be with us. And we don't know what happened to Stephen, because he never checked back in with us to confirm the show, and obviously he's not here.
He went dark.
He's out on the high seas somewhere, yo-ho-ho, and a bottle of rum, doing his pirate thing. But I'm sure it was all meant in good spirit, and maybe he's over, maybe he went over to the G8 thing and hasn't gotten home yet. Today, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be running the second half of our great initial interview. And he's the former Bush translator, New Age love god, and conspiracy freak Fred Burks, who translated for the State Department and wound up testifying for the defense in a terrorism trial in Indonesia. And this is a good moment for you all to stop right here, right now, and go back and listen to show number one if you haven't already. So that you can have a little bit of background on Fred Burks and know what he said to us the first time around, and then see what he has to say in this interview. So, I've been feeling a little nervous and upset waiting for Steve Dunifer to call. And then there was the bombing in London, which made me sad, of course. I have to say, I mean, it was just as sad when the United States was doing its, what was it called again, the initial bombing of Iraq, thrash and burn or whatever it was.
Shock and awe.
But anyway, it was pretty fucking awful, and I know people in England, and nobody wants to be riding in the subway and suddenly get blown up. And so within a couple of hours of hearing about this, actually I think within a couple of hours of anybody hearing about this, I got a piece of email from somebody saying that it was all a conspiracy. Let me read directly from it. The attacks on London were orchestrated by Bush and Blair under PE2 elements of Team Iraq and have been identified by the American-French alliance. This attack in London today upon innocent British people was for their own satanic political agenda.
Satanic.
So this annoyed me, to put it mildly, because, I mean, you could read the entire email, and there was no proof or evidence or anything. It was just some person spouting, saying that I know what's going on, and this is what's going on. And what we run this sort of stuff on the Are You Serious show for our entertainment and our interest and amusement, although I must say that when Fred Burks speaks, or when Jack Sarfati speaks about his peculiar notions of time travel, they're internally consistent and coherent, and they present some evidence and so forth. And this just really bugged me. And what bugs me isn't that some jerk out there sent off this thing, which wasn't a joke, which I'm sure he believes seriously, and uses this peculiar satanic political agenda rhetoric and all that. What bugs me is that a lot of, stupid hippies probably are going to believe this immediately, and there's a lack of discretion or logic or, it's almost like some people are living in primitive culture where there's no education and they're living in mud huts, and when they hear the rumor that if you have sex with a virgin, you can get rid of AIDS. You know, it's that level. To me, it's that level of stupidity. You know, it's
but what are you,
right
what are you,
up there with the Bible thumpers and the jihadists and so forth.
Are you opposed to all conspiracy theories? That bombing in particular, that the London bombing could have been orchestrated by our government?
I give it, a 1,000 chance that it may be true. I'm opposed to this person coming out immediately and running this nonsense, and I'm just opposed to the sort of poisonous, mimetic stupidity of people amplifying it without being able to without thinking about it. And I think, a couple of months pass, something like this might be more amusing, but
don't you think that on some level, even like say Fred Burks, immediately process that through his divide and conquer filter, because it's like the governments have an ongoing campaign to, sort of orchestrate things like this, extreme violence to polarize,
right?
That's a plausible
right. In order,
theory,
in
right?
order to enhance their agenda of
right.
Military conquest of the world, qua bono, who benefits? Which is not the only way that you go about an investigation. Otherwise, everybody would immediately solve every murder by seeing who gets money after somebody's killed or something like that. Doesn't really work that way. But Mike Rupert, who I interviewed for Rolling Stone, is a brilliant conspiracy theorist who presents, I don't agree with his conclusions, but he presents incredible evidence, real evidence of bad machinations by, bad actors related particularly to the United States government and so forth. When he talked about the 9/11 attacks and his process of trying to figure out, if it was a conspiracy, after presenting himself as an objective reporter, he told me, "Well, I knew right away." People believe what they want to believe, and we enjoy dealing with conspiracy theory. Many of them are unlikely, but anything is possible in this world.
Do you think always some percentage of people will be conspiracy theorists, and it'll never really be effective?
I think that particularly in a time where there's so much distributed media and every rumor and every person has a voice, people are going to believe all kinds of narratives. I'm open to the possibility that the world is, a complete put-on from top to finish, that we live in some kind of Philip K. Dick novel and everything is a fucking lie. So, I'm not a great purist on political reality, but if you're talking about actual events if you're talking about actual events in the seemingly phenomenal
right.
world, then it's probably best for large numbers of people to try to be accurate about it. And,
do you think if they programmed the whole world, they would program some conspiracy people?
Absolutely. There would be conspiracy going on. And
well, that's the greatest conspiracy of all, is that you need these conspiracy theorists in order to discredit the truth.
Yeah. I think it's actually harder to make a Byzantine stuff happen than people think it is, but it does happen.
It's harder for one person or a small group of people before it to sort of emerge. I think that happens as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, all these things definitely happen. So anyway, maybe we should take up a lighter topic or perhaps
firmer topic?
A firmer or rounder topic. And Jeff, you've had some observations this week when you weren't worrying about bombs going off in London.
Yeah, well, I have a day job, and I was walking to the bus stop, And I looked up in the sky where there's normally some other billboard, and I noticed that just a team of scantily clad women in white bras and panties. And, you know, of course, found myself crossing the street without looking as I headed towards the billboard, which is, you know, right above my bus stop. And then I realized as I got closer that the copy in the billboard said something like, tested by women with real curves, real women with real curves or something like that. Mm-hmm. And then I thought, wait, what do you mean? Real curves. Is that suggesting these women are heavy? And then I just looked closer and I realized, okay, yeah, these women are, in fact, significantly heavier than most models that you see dressed that scantily on a billboard advertising some, you know. And this was an advertisement for Dove firming lotion or whatever. I'm not clear exactly what it is.
But can we say they aren't heavy? They just look kind of normal, like a normal variety of women.
I guess that's kind of what I was saying.
Right.
To me, even seeing them in their underwear, I didn't initially think, oh, look at those heavy women. I thought, look at those hot chicks. Yeah. And then, I read the copy, I realized, oh, wait, these are meant to represent. And then they did. Judged by the standard of billboard models, yes, they are heavy. So, this made me feel kind of good about myself, you know, like, hey.
That you liked it.
Yeah.
You were attracted to normal.
You feel good you're attracted to normal women.
Well, and that I'm not just some, you know, typical frat guy who can only admit to being attracted to, 90-pound waifs, you know.
Right.
I felt good about myself on a political level, you know, like, hey, I'm enlightened. I'm one of
your
these.
Your libido is not brainwashed.
Yeah, exactly. But then as I started to process it a little bit more and questions arose, you know, because I thought, okay, this is a major company. This is Dove, you know, as in Dove soap.
Right.
They didn't accidentally come across this effect that this ad is having on me. Of course, they anticipated it and probably a number of other types of reactions, you know, in other people. So I started to think, okay, well, it seems pretty brilliant. And then I thought, well, wait a minute. Isn't there a conflict here because they're selling a product that's supposed to make heavier women feel like they can get closer to that ideal?
Right.
It's a firming product, right? So
right.
It reduces cellulite and makes you feel like you're hotter because you're lighter or you look lighter. You look less fat.
Right.
But they're doing it but they're using an advertisement that shows women, boldly shows women who are heavier than normal advertisement models.
Right. So, but the idea isn't that you shouldn't look like them. The idea is that a person of normal body types can look better than
Or can look good or uses this product. And these are some of them, and they look good even though they don't look like heroin addicted.
Well, I think the key is look good because cellulite, you can have cellulite at any weight.
Yeah.
And it's lumpy.
Right.
Cellulite means lumpy.
Right.
So you
it's
could
separate
be.
Separate from the idea of weight, of how much
right,
you weigh.
Right, exactly.
Right. But also, I mean, if they went too heavy with those models, I also would not have been attracted to them at all.
So, but are you attracted to cellulite?
No. So then I decided, well, it's not a conflict because the women that they're showing have already used the product and they're still pretty far from the supermodel ideal. So it actually is sort of consistent. It is. Mm. It is kind of a tribute to different body types, a diversity of body types. I still had a problem with that, though, because I don't trust big corporations to actually have that level of sincerity. So I looked into it a little bit, and I found that Dove is actually quite self-righteously pursuing this campaign of trying to raise women's self-esteem. They're posting these ads. They're sort of like the Am I Hot or Not? Web phenomenon from way back,
right.
Where you see, you know, you rank these people based on whether you think they're hot. And these billboards will show a picture of a woman, say, I don't know, a woman with a lot of freckles on her face, for instance, and says, asks you to choose, you know, flawed or flawless.
Yeah.
Like one or the other. And I guess you go to the website and you can actually vote on whether you think this woman's flawed or flawless and she's got all these freckles on her face, you know. I don't know. That starts to bother me a little bit because it's kind of objectifying women. It's teaching people to objectify women this way, just like an up or down vote, hot or not. And who knows what the real results of these polls are anyway. You know, I mean, obviously they wouldn't be publicizing if the results weren't.
Well, I mean, there you got two things that people want. They want to have this thing about being kinder to all kinds of body images, but they also love to vote in these, you know, one or the other kinds of situations. So,
right.
So you know, everybody's getting exactly what they want and what they deserve. Our guest today is Fred Burks. Fred has been with us before. In fact, he was our guest for the first show. Burks was an interpreter working with George W. Bush, among others. He ended up in Indonesia testifying for the defense in the terrorism trial of Abu Bakar Basir, the Muslim clerk accused of bombing a nightclub in Bali. Burks is also experienced, a veteran of a few psychedelic experiences, and a believer in UFOs, the power of love, and the darkest conspiracy accusations against those in power in America. Welcome back, Fred.
Great,
so you're experienced. What role has psychedelic substances played in your thinking and your view of the world?
Well, actually, I have not used psychedelic substances a lot. My first time was probably back when I was in college, and I was 20 or 21. But each time I did use them, it was incredibly mind-expanding. And I went to some very deep spiritual places that I was able to just feel the interconnection of all beings and just feel the love that is there in a way that was quite astounding. And I said, I want to be able to get back to this without these drugs.
Mm.
And so I did not use them very often. And I really became committed. Well, I was committed before, but even more committed to wanting to open my mind to being in that space without the drugs. And I didn't always have positive experience. I probably did psychedelic drugs my whole life, maybe 10 times.
You had a few paranoid trips?
Not really paranoid, yeah. But some dark stuff, really right. Dark stuff
right.
Came up.
Yeah. All right. Back to real politics for a minute. You called Basir, the alleged terrorist, a nice old man, according to the Wall Street Journal. Your former boss said you'd gone over the deep end. Do you have any worries that Basir might have, in fact, been guilty of this seriously, horrific act, and do you know where Basir is now?
Yeah, Basir is in jail right now.
Okay.
He's serving a 2.5-year sentence.
That's right.
I have no doubt that Basir does not have very good will towards the government of the United States. And although he, as far as I know from everybody I've checked with, he does not advocate violence, I'll bet that he probably smiled when 9/11 happened. Which is not a good thing, and I'm not saying I support that in the least. I'm not saying in the least that I support Abu Bakr Basir, but I completely do not support the manipulations that are happening secretly behind closed doors and then being completely denied by the government in order to manipulate the world opinion to do something.
Well,
that's
I think you did a valid thing by testifying to what you heard, which was these people talking about the need to get him before the Bali bombing and before he went on trial.
Right.
Whether or not he's guilty, it's still valid that he gets a defense.
Sure.
And that these facts come to the surface.
Can you go into what you believe was the U.S. involvement in the Bali bombings?
Sure. I should first mention that I'm not an expert in the Bali bombings. I've much more followed 9/11. And on the website wanttoknow.info, we have lots of great, solid, reliable information where you just click and it takes you to, for instance, the ABC website showing you things that will just boggle your mind. Now, the Bali bombing, it's mostly through my background in 9/11 trying to figure out what was going on there. Basically, there is a plan to try to divide and conquer, which has been an old strategy, millennia in practice, where they want to keep people in fear. You want to keep them polarized. You know, there's good and bad. You know, you're either with us or against us. And this is how you keep people under your control. Because when you're in fear, you're willing to surrender your own will to others. So the Bali bombing was a part of that. It's a part of Indonesia was reluctant to support us in the war on terror. Australia was very reluctant. As soon as that Bali bombing happened, and isn't it interesting that a bunch of Australians were killed and not Americans, suddenly Australia is on board overnight. Totally supporting the U.S. war on terror.
It seems to me, I mean, we are on some level talking about mind control on a mass scale. I think when we talk about conspiracy theory, we're also talking about mind control or possible actual conspiracies. We're talking about mind control on a large scale. And one of the things that comes up for me when I hear about some of these theories is how do you get so many people to keep the secret? But then there's also the fact that people do come forward, like in the Kennedy assassination, people come forward and say, hey, I did it, and nobody believes them. So there's certain levels of mental manipulation going on there. Now, you have a whole segment on Want to Know about mind control.
Right.
And how far do you think all this goes back? Have there really been genuine Manchurian candidates? And does mind control work on the individual level and also on the level of entire populations?
Yes, absolutely. There's many different kinds of mind manipulation is maybe the better way to put it. Sometimes it's direct mind control, sometimes it's indirect. The thing I just mentioned about polarization, divide and conquer, that's all a very indirect thing which the press consciously or unconsciously joins in. And this stuff has been going on for millennia. Now, the first time we had a Manchurian candidate type situation where people literally were trained through mind control techniques to work as killers was actually in the 11th century. And it was a group called the Asashim, which is where the name Assassin
Hassan
comes from.
Hassan E-Sabah.
Yes, so you know about that. Wow, I'm amazed.
Well, I sometimes call myself Hassan E-Syria.
And the active syllable there, I guess, being hash.
Yes, that's right. They used hash to drug these people into believing they were in heaven, and then they met their sort of god or savior who would order them to do things, and as long as they did the things, they got to have all the women they wanted, all the drugs, and they lived in a heavenly life, and they thought that was the reality because they had been fooled into it.
Well, what's funny is that now you've got that same thing going on, but they're told to wait until they get to heaven to have all their women and hash.
Right.
I don't even think they get the hash, actually.
No, they don't get the hash. They just get, you know, a bunch of virgins. And what's so great about virgins anyway? I just didn't ever understand.
We could talk about that.
Good point.
I think we're going to break for a moment to hear some extreme music of some sort, and we'll be right back.
Raindrops on kittens and schnitzel on roses, nose cream on my nose, whiskers and crisp eyelashes with noodles, wild geese that fly with their wings tied up with strings. These are a few of my favorite things. Ponies in dresses and warm, warm doorbells and brown raindrops. Girls with blue whiskers tied up with noodles. Wild kettles that fly with bright copper wings. These are a few of my favorite things. The dog bites, the bee stings. I simply remember my favorite things. And then I feel so bad. Lashes that sting on colored girls tied up with blue satin sashes. Wild brown girls tied up in warm strings. Wild, wild white girls that melt into nose cream. These are a few of my favorite things. Nose cream on ponies, nose cream on kittens. Nose cream on roses and nose cream on mittens. Bells and 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 wild geese. When the bee stings, I simply remember my dog bites. And then I feel so, so bad.
Serious. We're back talking with Fred Burks.
You mentioned on your website psychic forces, and that refers to governments doing things like remote viewing and everything. And you give an example of people riding motorcycles blindfolded through an obstacle course, right? So I want to know what you know about that in the CIA and the KGB in Russia, and how long. And what are people really doing about that?
Well, that's been going on for quite a while. And the specific case where the men soldiers were blindfolded and riding on obstacle course was related by a three-star general in a meeting that I was in, a three-star American general talking about Indonesian psychic forces. That American general did not know we have also those forces, which are kept very secret.
So you think these kinds of experimentations are still going on? I know that they had SRI and a bunch of people doing remote viewing, and supposedly they let all those people go either because it didn't work or because the Cold War was over. There are two sides to
that's
that debate.
What
do you know about that? Yeah.
Yes, Stanford Research Institute began their remote viewing program in 1971. It was one of the most prestigious research institutes in the nation, and they hired some top psychics to come in, and they did some work where they were able to go right into top secret bases. First, they used American bases and read the files locked in these deep hidden cabinets. And everybody around is going, pardon the language, but holy shit. Yeah. That means that anybody who's psychic can go in and do this remote viewing and get any secret they want.
Now the Skeptic Society is going to be jumping down our throat and all over our email. Where do you see the evidence for this being, or where can people look at the evidence?
Oh, on the website, just go in, type remote viewing. And remote viewing is very well established. It's well known that they pumped, I think it was $25 million over – I had the figures right, but it was quite a few million dollars into the program. It was stopped in 1995, supposedly because they didn't need it anymore, when in fact it just was militarized. Mm-hmm. They stopped using civilian contractors. And we have all these civilian contractors now who are speaking out. Amazingly, they weren't sworn to secrecy agreements on many things.
So why isn't there at least some sized, you know, counterinsurgency going on? I could imagine a small team of civilians who are able to do this remote viewing, and you know,
there is
fighting the good fight, or something.
There is
really, and so what does that look like? I mean,
you got to understand, there's this whole military industrial pharmaceutical complex that's just huge. It's a huge hierarchy, and this whole thing is based on hierarchical belief systems, and each of us buys into that hierarchical system to a greater or lesser degree. The more you buy into it, the easier it is for you to be manipulated by it. But then when you go inside and you realize that all that hierarchy is coming from inside of us, and you realize that every one of us is infinitely powerful in my own belief, then you can start reversing the whole process in your own being. And each person who does that in their own selves then starts influencing those around us. And there are people coming together in groups and literally working to sort of inspire people to unravel this whole hierarchical system.
So, but I guess I'm asking... why don't we hear like individual revelations of huge secrets? Mm. And I guess maybe we do. I mean,
usually
write them
off
as paranoid, but
right.
But some that would really be verifiable. I don't know. Somehow they would be verifiable to some level.
Right. Exactly. Well, go to the website. Believe me, we've got a lot of information there that is verifiable, that comes from sometimes from sources like that. I won't say that those are the sources because people won't do that. But then they'll tell me, if you want to prove this, here's how to go verify it. You know, they found.
So, I mean, have you ever seen a world leader go, damn, how did they know that? Nobody was around when I was doing
that. But why would they? I mean, in this country especially, you're still talking about a media that treats the idea that the government burned its own people in Waco as crackpotism. I mean, and this is something... I don't particularly buy into every conspiracy theory that comes down the pike either.
Well,
but
that's not a conspiracy theory. That was just... an event.
The fact that it's still construed as a conspiracy in this country by the media just goes to show why this stuff isn't talked about more. Doesn't it?
I guess so. Well, let's end on a positive note. Mm. We want Fred Birx to tell us about his Web of Love and what that's all about, and tell us about some of the exercises that you suggest
sure.
for people.
Well, it's getting right back to what I was talking about, that the power is actually within each of us. And we allow ourselves on some level to be fooled and buy into the whole hierarchical system. But when you remember that deep down, every one of us has a heart. I don't think anybody would argue that every person in this world has a heart. Kind of tough to live without one. And there's a place in everyone's heart. There's a place in everyone's heart that wants to love and be loved. Now, for some people, it gets totally suppressed or repressed, whatever, and they're not in touch with it, but it's still there. And I believe that when each of us decides to really try to see that that does exist in every person and to support that place in their heart, we can create huge transformation around the world. So I've developed a website called webofloveorg, just like it sounds, no spaces. And one of the key exercises right on the homepage of that website is called Breathing the Web of Love. And it's very simple. It's a simple breathing exercise where you...
Well, let's all do it together now.
Okay. Well, let me just briefly describe it, and then we can do it once.
All right.
So on the in-breath, the wording that I have found that works best for me is, your sacred love flows into me. And so on the in-breath, just really feeling and visualizing that as much as possible, and the feeling is what you really want to get. And then on the out-breath, my sacred love flows out to you. And if you can't remember those words, you can just say something like, love to me, love to you. It's just
easier.
A flow in and out. So you don't have to remember those exact words, so they're on the website. But it's envisioning that around the planet, there's actually a web of interconnection. That place in each of our hearts is already connected, but people just suppress it. And so imagine that web. Imagine that actually there's a conspiracy of love going on, that everybody really does want to love us. They've just totally isolated themselves from that part. So by us choosing to strengthen that, we can create a wonderful transformation.
Okay, well, we're just going to totally blow our reputations here, but you go ahead and lead us in this.
Sure. So all we're going to do is then just invite you to maybe just two nice, full, deep breaths, and we're going to do a slow, deep in-breath, and say it in your mind. It's not about saying it out loud,
okay.
But let's just do the easy one.
You say it out loud.
Okay, I'll just mention the in-breath, love to me, and then out-breath, love to you. And just seeing how much you can feel that and opening to the possibility that there is a web that we're connecting into as we do this.
Okay.
So let's breathe out first and then just do a slow, deep in-breath and just feel as much as you can everybody's love flowing into you. Then a slow, deep out-breath, my love flows out to all of you.
Okay, well, they say dead air is bad on the radio. I hope.
I think my hand just found Jeff's ass during that. Sorry.
I hope you all pick up.
Or actually, I'm not.
That,
I will not.
On that deep.
You mean that wasn't the web of love?
It actually was, but it was a five-fingered web of love.
Five-fingered web of love. I want to thank Fred Birx for coming in and joining us for a second time. He's a great guest, and I hope we have him back again.
Thanks. My pleasure.
Next week on the Are You Serious Show, we talk to the creators of the Philip K. Dick robot. The music you heard this week was by Negative Land off their new release, No Business. Don't forget to check mondoglobal.net for the latest episodes of this show, Neophiles, and Pastor Jack. And special thanks to Digital Dr. Eddie Ferronda, sound engineer extraordinaire. In conversation, our gang of four, Are You Serious, Sherry Miller, Steve Robles, and me, Jeff Deal. This has been the Are You Serious Show. Don't be afraid of the dark.